And now for our feature presentation, Tom Hanks Defense Force, with your hosts, Alex Halpern and Jack Fryer, a podcast for people who love film, television, and Tom Hanks. Welcome back to Tom Hanks Defense Force. Jack, love your shirt.
Thank you. It's for those who can't see, because obviously it's an audio format and you can't see. I'm wearing the lemon face from The Simpsons when the Shelbyville person takes a direct bite from the lemon tree.
Oh, I thought it was like constipated SpongeBob.
No, it's the lemon of Troy from The Simpsons episode.
Wow, that's clearly my Matt Groening fan.
Yeah, like, it's one of the classics episodes. Yeah,
as prominent as it should be.
Yeah. Okay, so today we're doing a mystery pitch, but we've done not a theme mystery pitch, but today there's no theme. Everything goes. It's complete potluck.
We have no idea.
I know.
This is, the first idea that actually came into my mind was quite a controversial one.
Okay.
I'm not sure if I'm willing to go with that or not, so I'll tone it down a bit.
Okay.
Jack, do you want to hit me first?
Yeah, there's been two I've been toying with, but I think I'm going to go with one of them. Okay, this has been in my head for longer, scary. So I think I need to get this one out of my system.
Okay.
Okay, so this one, I am going to give you the actors in them. So there's three brothers.
Three brothers, okay.
They're played by Marilyn Manson,
yeah.
Nick Cage, and David Schwimmer. They're brothers.
Wow.
You can make them trips if you want to.
So Marilyn Manson, Nick Cage, and David Schwimmer.
And they have to go on a road trip to find, because it turns out one of them, Marilyn Manson, has had a long-lost son, and to reconnect after the death of their mother, they go to try and find them. But the big thing in this mystery pitch is for you, the person who's playing the son is the long-awaited acting comeback of Bruce Cook from Thunderpants.
Wow. Okay. Am I making the plot or
you,
the...
Well, all I've given you is the three of them have to go on a road trip to find Bruce, to meet Bruce Cook.
Okay.
The kid from Thunderpants. The one that wasn't Rupert Grint.
They have to find Bruce Cook. Okay, yeah. Right.
I hope his name's Bruce Cook. This whole episode's redundant.
Otherwise, we have a lot to answer for.
Yeah, sorry, Bruce.
Yeah, there's a Reddit subgroup that are dedicated to hating us. Okay, so episode one of this. Can we make it a TV series?
Yeah, go on then. It's your birthday. Okay. Happy birthday, by the way.
Oh, thank you so much, man.
And I've been with you all day and not said happy birthday. So, yeah, thank you.
Oh, sunshine, thank you. That is, God. I cry every time I see you.
Oh, my God, yeah. 13 and a half years of friendship right now. For those who can't see us, we're holding hands. So, yeah.
It's a beautiful moment of bromance.
That's good, yeah.
It is solid. Okay,
bromance, so go. That's
good. Yeah, true bromance. That's what the film is called.
Bromance.
True bromance. It's called True Bromance. So, basically, what's going to happen in True Bromance is they... Okay, so everyone starts off... it starts off with a flashback to the incident that Bruce Cook had with his mum, and it's very much like the what's a really good example? I'm going to say the beginning of X-Men, the first one,
okay,
with Magneto's origin.
Oh, okay.
That same kind of like somberness.
Okay.
Not set in the Nazi concentration camp.
Okay.
Obviously, this is very different. So they're gonna. Okay, so they're starting off. It's a very moody backstory of what's happened to Bruce Cook.
Okay.
And then they basically... and then so it cuts the present day, and Marilyn Manson has suddenly realised everything went downhill from irresponsible hate. Realised, okay, the career isn't what it used to be. I still live in this weird, creepy mansion in West Hollywood. I'm just going to... find my brothers, because they're all playing themselves.
Okay,
well.
Okay.
There's a bit of a past the marketing is everyone has set up all their fan theories about how Marilyn Manson, David Schwimmer, and
Nick Cage
are all actually brothers in real life. You're a little bit like Entourage, actually playing themselves.
Okay.
And so, the first half season to the first season, it could be the whole thing, is where they're visited by Michael Gambon, who tells them there is
Dumbledore.
They're visited by he saw like this sort of cosplay as Dumbledore a lot, but we're in like really obscure situations just to mess with people, like turning up in restaurants and stealing their fries, literally just talking shit about Gandalf.
It's been like a long running feud with Ian McKellen. Like, he drives past that room like, "You suck, Gambon!" Like, yeah. "I always might need to run, Gandalf."
Yeah. Crashes into his Bugatti Veyron. Yeah.
Yeah. Punctures his tyres.
So Michael Gambon keeps on visiting them and keeps on giving them like really secretive signs about the fact that all three of them could be connected.
Okay.
And at first it starts off really subtle, like leaving notes onto the door.
Okay.
Sending them like packages with like strange clues about, you know, who could your brother actually be. Sending him like edited versions of Where's Wally, but like Where's Your Brother, and then you have to find your brother in like a sort of Where's Wally style like picture book. And yeah, and then they eventually realise by the end of the first season that they are actually brothers.
Okay.
And then you have this, you know, a similar, it cuts to a similar story of what Bruce Cook is doing.
Okay.
And why they have, and it leaves them on the cliffhanger about why they Ooh. Have to find them. So obviously you don't know about the mother, etc. Oh, okay, this is interesting. And, but then, it's when the second season when the road trip really starts. And they, basically, they commit an assassination against Tom Green in the first, like...
The guy from Freddy Got Fingered?
Yeah, in the first episode. In the first ever episode.
What is the assassination? Is it like a drive-by shooting? Is it like a sniper rifle? What is it?
No, it's like the other really weird part in Freddy. I mean, I say the really weird part. The whole thing is weird.
Yeah. And a terrible film.
Yeah. it's absolutely god-awful.
Yeah.
When he commits roadkill.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, he kills the stag.
Yeah.
And then he starts like wearing it and it's all really... awful.
Yeah.
Really like nasty. And they just run him down. They run down Tom Green.
Oh.
Tom Green ends up actually surviving and like,
okay.
forming a new civilization north of the wall.
Okay.
So then that's in the
first episode. Tennessee Williams wrote Freddy Got Fingered.
Really?
Yeah. One of his earlier works. So they just found it in a drawer, like, let's make this a film.
But Freddy. Can you see Arnold Schwarzenegger as
Stanley. Stella. 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 Stella, I'll be back. Let off some steam, dude. Is it, who's a woman called?
You sound like the German guy from The Human
Centipede. Oh, that's all right. So Alex dropped a coaster. Oh, man. I haven't seen Human Centipede yet.
Don't.
You don't need to.
You are not missing anything by not watching this film. Anyway, yes, that happens. And then they basically... they kind of end up winding their way past Michael Bay's holiday home, this massive cabin in the woods that is actually like run by all this tech similar to the cabin in the woods.
Oh, okay.
But used to keep his explosions inside. So walk in and literally his living room is an entire vacuum of intense exploding heat.
Okay.
Yeah. So he so that happens. That's what the second episode is dedicated
of
to
a season
season.
So oh, okay.
Episode of the second season, yeah.
Okay.
Unless we give some clues to how this could happen in the first season, and then the executive producers can decide whether they want to make it the first season or the second season.
Benioff and Weiss from Game of Thrones.
This is their comeback. Everyone hates them after the end of season 8, but this is how they come back to it. This is how they come back to
prominence,
internet fame. Fame from the original fans. And they go to, and so that happens in the second episode. They find Paul Blart, who then chases them on his moped. That happens in the second episode as well, on the way to Michael Bay's house.
Okay, that's fine. That's really fine.
Yeah, everything is there. Area 51 is there. They drive through that.
But just drive through, like, knocking freight through the offices, like, mowing some desks down.
It's still Bill Pullman shooting cans off the inside of that spaceship, you know,
from Independence
Day. But they've been doing that for, like, years, because you never get the shot quite right. So that keeps on going.
Okay.
And then, in the finale of that season, they find... I was going to say Thomas Cook. What's his name?
Bruce Kirk. Bruce Kirk. Home is Brooke. What, the holiday home?
He finds...
And they get a really nice holiday.
Yeah. No, they have to persuade the CEO, Mr. Thomas Cook, that they have to find other Cookie in... he's in Mexico.
Okay, yeah.
Or no, even somewhere even more outlandish, like Greenland.
Okay.
Or... Provence. I know they have to find him in the Cannes Film Festival.
Oh my god.
And there's a crossover with Mr. Bean 2, Mr. Bean's Holiday. You know where they have to take the kid back to Cannes?
Yes.
Yeah, there's a crossover. So they find Mr. Bean. And then you realise that the French kid from the French son from Mr. Bean's Holiday takes off his mask and it's Arya Stark. And they basically have to. And so they realise, hang on a second, we've been chasing this. Helping Mr. Bean chase this one, crack this one kid down. But Arya, where has the where is our actual
Bruce Cook?
Yeah, where is the actual Bruce Cook? And then they say, oh no, he's just won the Indian elections. So they have to fly all the way out to India to try and persuade him not to run in Modi's party.
Okay.
And then they and then it turns into a bit of a sort of Sex and the City 2 style diorama where they go to another country and they learn all about the people and the land and and then everyone learns a bit something like in a cookery show in a foreign country. Like, it's just, educational, insightful. It ends in a really wholesome
note. That's really nice.
Yeah. He doesn't become Prime Minister of India in the end.
Okay.
But
he ends up setting up funding Bernstein's Bagels.
Yeah.
And then that spins into the next film.
And then he becomes Larry King's dad in the future.
Oh, this is amazing.
Yeah, as an adult, he's played by Max von Sydow, who's the angel of Larry King.
Oh, that's amazing.
Right, I'm going to...
Is it my go next?
It's your go. Okay.
Okay, so this is how I would do this one. I've planned this in my head already. I don't know what the title will be. I've been trying to think of a Marilyn Manson song. I want to call it The Beautiful People Driving. I just call it that.
Wow.
The beautiful... No, they drive a Volkswagen. It's called The Beautiful Beetle. There you go, sorted. There you go, yeah. Oh, mate, yeah.
Oh, that's
that was our old band Horror of Inn. We only had two practices. We only covered that song.
That's
That was
it's like the simplest song. It's just saying the entire song.
When I saw Marilyn Manson live, Johnny Depp came up and did that song. I was like, it was a terrible gig, but to see Johnny Depp do that was cool. Also, they did Dope Show and changed to Depp Show. I was like,
nice.
Give that man the cookie. I don't know, but yeah.
There's probably one tour hand that thought up that name. It probably wasn't any of the band.
So my version. Okay, so mine's going to be a film. It's going to be like an indie film, maybe a Taika Waititi directed film.
Mm.
Obviously, they're not playing themselves. So basically, the three brothers, they used to live together in, say, Queens in New York.
Yeah.
Then they had a big argument and decided to move apart. And obviously, they moved apart. They started up families. So David Schwimmer moved to the Bronx, where he's like a personal trainer.
Yeah.
Marilyn Manson's character is a tattoo artist. He's living in Brooklyn.
Nice.
And obviously David Schwimmer, Nick Cage is very successful. He's like an actor, but he's living in Manhattan. He's got like a glass penthouse on the top of a big skyscraper.
That's something up there.
Yeah, he's got no walls in his house as well. It's all glass, so yeah.
Oh, sick.
And there could be a scene where like a bird drops this pebble and his whole living room glass just shatters.
Wow.
So yeah, they're all brothers, and basically they moved apart. They're still like friendly. They get together at Christmas, Thanksgiving, Halloween, every time a new Star Wars film is released, all the important moments of the year,
all the big things.
Yeah, they get together, but they've never really fully healed after the big incident that caused them to move apart from each other.
Yeah.
And then obviously Nick Cage has got his own kids, David Schwimmer's got kids, and Marilyn Manson's obviously he's like a single Pringle, he's a bachelor, living in his gothic little penthouse. Obviously, he gets a letter delivered to him one day, delivered by Jurgen Klopp, who delivers the letter, and delivers a letter. And he opens the door and goes, boom!
And it just blows into his hand.
And he gives him a letter, because obviously Liverpool on a United States pre-season warm-up tour, playing American clubs.
Nice.
And Jurgen Klopp decides to help out a postman who breaks his leg to deliver the last letter. So that letter goes to Marilyn Manson. And it turns out to be the letter from... from Bruce Kirk and says, my mother's died. The last thing she told me was, you're my father. Can you come meet me? And he decides to... He goes, wow, I've actually got a kid, I've got the kid from Thunderpants is my kid. So, yeah.
Does he call him the kid from Thunderpants?
Maybe,
the entire film.
I know, but yeah.
He never calls him by his name.
So, basically, though, he decides, look, I want to go meet him, but by chance, he bumps into Nick Cage in Walmart, of all places, in the frozen food section.
Interesting.
And they get talking, and he lets it slip, and they're like, oh, I'll go with you. And Nick Cage is like, oh, yeah, I can't drive. I lost my license because I, ploughed down a bunch of protesters. The people protesting the price of Starbucks was too high. He just ploughed all of them down. So as a result, he just got a suspended sentence because he's America's hero. So and they're like, the I know who can dive. David Schwimmer's character. I haven't named him. I'm just going to call him David. They're not themselves or called their name. I'm just going to refer to them as the actor's name just so you, to help the audience visualise. Because
Storyboarding it.
Yeah, so David Schwimmer basically...
Take a moment to stop and storyboard it for yourself.
Yeah.
And... action.
So David Schwimmer decides to look, I've got some annual leave, I'm gonna just take some time off work, I'll drive you, you know, it'll be good to meet my nephew. So they decide to drive, and they're driving from New York to Texas, so it's gonna be a long old drive, and they get onto various hijinks on the way, like they have to evade a biker gang in Death Valley in California. I don't know how they get to. I don't know American geography, but I imagine
they're driving up the sides of the Great Canyon.
They drive. They have to. There's a scene where they get chased by a biker gang. They have to jump the Grand Canyon.
Oh, so they have to jump it like several times. Yeah,
avoid them. No, they jump it. Then Nick Cage's hat loses his hat, and it's his lucky hat. And so he has to jump the canyon again to go back and get the hat. And then they jump it again. And so, yeah, then they can do a thing like they drive up the Space Needle in Seattle at one point as well. They're being chased by Donald Trump.
They drive too fast and actually go up into orbit.
Yeah. And you can have a scene like they drive past at Nanglark and they take magic mushrooms.
Yeah.
And they part their way, it turns out they've carved Joey from Friends into Mount Rushmore as the fifth head.
Nice.
And Matt LeBlanc just drives and goes, it's been done before, and just drives off again. And that nothing explains that cameo.
Just blows it up. And then it cuts to Matt LeBlanc going and buying C4 to the face.
It's like, this just keeps happening. So yeah, and there could be another scene where I don't know, like their car breaks down and they end up getting towed by
towed from the window.
They end up getting towed by Bernie Sanders, and David Schwimmer is quite Republican, but in this comic they have this really deep chat, and at the end he becomes like a member of Antifa, and they have to stop at like a alt right alley, and David Schwimmer just throws a Molotov and then drives off.
He's the one Antifa guy that actually shows his face.
Yeah. The thing is though, David Schwimmer keeps committing crime, saying, oh, it's that guy from Blackpool who looks like me, he's on the loose in America. That was a
do they meet?
Hopefully. I want David Schwimmer to turn up in that guy's sentencing. And when they get sentenced, he's like, like the whole Friends clap. But anyway, yeah, so they
is
drive
it a splitting image.
So they drive to Bruce Cook's house and they find Bruce Cook. He turns out he's living there with his five girlfriends. Mm. All who are all massive Thunderpants fans. Like, you know, they've all got like Thunderpants t-shirts on. Rupert Grint's in the kitchen as well, chopping all the onions and all that, making the dinner. And they find Bruce Cook, and Bruce Cook's like, so, you might be my dad. They do agree to a DNA test. They can't go through Jeremy Kyle, because he's obviously out of business for now.
Yeah.
So they have to go try and find the one guy in Texas who can do a DNA test on the same day. So they go find the DNA tester, who's played by Mel Gibson. And this is Mel Gibson, though, but who's like, he's completely shaved his head, so it's like bald Gibson. Yeah. and it's also Diego Maradona's there as the assistant. So they get to do the Diego Maradona, and Mel Gibson have to give a DNA test. But it's like a weird experimental DNA test, and they have to transport their minds into the shadow realm to collectively defeat a monster, which is like a big, like it's basically like a big shadow dragon kind of thing.
Who's it voiced by?
Seth Rogen. Yeah, and so they defeat the shadow monster, and it turns out Bruce Cook is Marilyn Manson's son, and then they decide just to get back into the Beetle and drive back off to New York, and it's because he wants to spend some time. They're like, sure, I drive off.
Mm.
And the thing is also, it turns out, though, Nick Cage's partner is expecting, and it turns out the second half of the film is like a race back against the clock to get them back for the due date. Yeah. And so, yeah, they have to, like, evade tolls, evade the FBI, you know.
Sounded fun.
And, you know, yeah, and so that's, and they end up making it back in time, and they decide, Nick Cage says, what are you going to name the kid? And he says, well, I'm going to name it Nebuchadnezzar, after the character of the Bible. And they all celebrate the birth of Nebuchadnezzar, and then it ends.
That was magnificent.
Yeah, that was everything.
That was fantastic.
I've been playing this in my head for days.
There is nothing else I can add to that.
Yeah,
that nailed it. Right, we're going to do ours super quickly because we're quite limited for time.
That'll be fine, yeah.
Okay, so, Jack, okay. I'm going to give you... okay, the aristocratic elite on Earth... people wake up, everyone wakes up one morning.
Okay.
And the entire aristocratic elite is now R2-D2.
Okay.
They're all the same people, they're just, everyone is R2-D2.
Okay. So everyone's R2-D2?
Yeah. What does that film look like?
Well, so...
How do people interact with R2-D2?
Okay.
Is it like... Is it a revolution? Do people treat it a bit like District 9? Like, how does...
Okay, so I'm going to do it from a point of... There's an aristocratic family and they have a group of servants. It's all from a servant's point of view.
Nice.
The head servants can be played... There's three servants. They're played by Emma Stone, Timothy Chalamet and Nicholas Holt.
Nice.
They're all graduates who couldn't find work, so they become... So then it shows you before the snap, as I'm going to call it. It shows me interacting with the actual families. You know, they're all in the actual... And they're treated pretty poorly as servants.
Mm.
But one day they wake up, it's like a big thunderstorm, global power cut, wake up, suddenly, they go to wake them up, it's not the family, but it's R2-D2, it's just two R2-D2s. And they're all going like, me, 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 like that, and they can't communicate. And they don't know how to do it. So and then, like, they think... It's just like a prank. They just like wheel them outside into like outside.
Oh no!
And they like, and then they realize, seeing the news, it's like aristocrats are being turned into R2-D2, like a global storm.
Yeah.
And they need to think of, hang on, we need to try and do something. So they need to think of, we need to translate R2-D2. And there's only one man who can translate R2-D2. There's two men who can translate R2-D2: Mark Hamill and Anthony Daniels, who played C-3PO. So, and they need to try and find, and like, it turns out there's this monster, it's like this big like goat demon or something, who did this all as like revenge against the aristocracy.
Yeah.
And makes a challenge. The first person, he will switch everyone back, but it's got to be, he will switch one family a day.
Uh-huh.
But the first person to get turned back has to be the first person who's got to find Anthony Daniels and Mark Hamill.
Yeah.
Because they're going to be moved to a different location each day, apart from this like weird game.
Oh, sure.
And so it's a race against time between these servants and another group of servants to try and get to this goat demon, to try and get them back.
Yeah.
And so they've got R2-D2's like in the back of this like seven-seater or something like that. They're all driving off. And they start, they see other R2-D2s going about. It's a bit like 28 Days Later, R2-D2 just roaming about the street.
Yeah.
There could be a scene where they think they're going to hit a trash can, actually knock over an R2-D2. And so, yeah, and it turns out it's like the global race to try and find Mark Hamill and Anthony Daniels. And they don't know where they are, though.
Yeah.
But then, like, it turns then, Steve Bannon tweets the location of where he believes is Mark Hamill. And they realise they're very close. But they can see on this app, there is another car close. It becomes like a race against time. It turns into Mad Max, like Fury Road. And they're like ramming each other off. It's like war boy gangs of like R2-D2s.
Is there a guy with a guitar?
Yeah. Doing the Star Wars theme on guitar. Yeah, all that, yeah. And so they then like, they win eventually due to like some very skilled driving. And so also, it turns out the R2-D2s have the gadgets. So all like the little fire starter things are shooting out, the electric sparks with the jets hovering. They all use them.
Ooh.
And it turns out though, and they find Anthony Daniels and Mark Hamill, and they translate for R2-D2. And they apologise for servants for how badly they're treating them. Mm. They apologise for everything, and they kind of make kiss and make up, effectively. Aww. And obviously, it turns out that turns them back. It turns out this goat demon is trying to get all the aristocracy to answer to their crimes.
Ooh.
And so he's making them like realise how bad they've treated people. And then they turn, and then he turns
a morality tale in there.
Then he whisks Anthony Daniels and Mark Hamill away, and the next day you see him in the news, another group of aristocrats have got to try and find R2-D2. Like, and it becomes like this global game, basically. This
massive search.
And it turns out, and also
Dan Brown-esque.
Yeah, the US government cloned Anthony Daniels and Mark Hamill. So like the actual ones are all doing other acting projects, they're doing Star Wars conventions, voicing Chucky, whatever.
Yeah.
But then the actual real ones are all in this like never ending game.
Oh, yeah.
And the film ends with like the last R2-D2 being turned back. And it turns out the whole global economy has changed now.
Mm.
And like everywhere's a lot more equality happening, a lot more people are out of debt, a lot more people are secure. And also have a servant, so it turns out they've all like started families, and it all becomes really nice. But it's like a morality tale basically, but with R2-D2 and goat demons.
Oh. I like it. That's really strong.
Yeah. What's your one then?
Right, my one. So mine is an alternate reality sci-fi horror, where basically it's kind of similar to the opening perspective like yours, where it starts off from the perspective of the servants. And mine is, so Stalin and a group of the Soviet elite are being transported secretly through Siberia because of, you know, various reasons why they have to run.
Okay.
You know, it could be the it could be an alternate reality where the Nazis are winning the Second World War.
Oh, okay.
It could be the case where, like, you know, there are people who are assassinating them in...
Oh, okay.
people who are chasing them for, yeah, like an assassination attempt.
They could be trying to get Pearl Jam tickets.
Yes, yes, that's it. And basically, like, halfway down this journey, all the Soviet elite transform into monsters.
Okay.
They form into monsters of some kind. And they... And so the bodyguards and propagandists,
okay,
who are escorting this group secretly, have to make up actual reasons,
okay,
why they have to make up actual reasons why, like, these people haven't turned into these people, like, have turned into these monsters,
okay,
and they try and hide it, and they basically they say, well, you know, for the time being, we are using these R2-D2-like robots.
Oh, okay.
R2-D2 hasn't been made yet.
Okay.
They just use these robot designs to look exactly like R2-D2. Yeah. And
like QC, like Q1 or something. Yeah. QC, Q1.
And they, like, broadcast images of these robots they've made to the rest of the world to say, the Supreme Leaders aren't available at this time.
Yeah.
You know, these robots will be used to communicate them, to communicate their messages to the rest of the Soviet Union. And they have to, and it's literally about them making up the reasons, like, why the Soviet leaders are being replaced by these robots.
Okay.
So it's quite philosophical and almost turns into a kind of Philip K. Dick-esque,
okay,
or Dune-like, ultra high concept sci-fi.
Lovely.
And, yeah, and it's about that process. It's a little bit like Doctor Strange, like, in lots of ways. Okay. The war room dynamic.
Yeah.
Like, dynamic.
You can't find here, this is the war room.
So, thank you for listening.
That was quick. That was a good one, yeah.
No, just matter.
How does it end?
So, basically, George Lucas takes the designs and then makes that into R2-D2.
Okay.
And, it actually leaves a bit of a cliffhanger because the monsters, you know, the people who were the Russian elite and then the Soviet elite and have become these monsters, actually escape in the end.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, no one knows if they're heading, like, down towards China or further into Russia. It leaves it open for J.J. Abrams to make two sequels like the Cloverfield trilogy. And no one knows how they're connected, but they are through some fan theory and high concept.
That's excellent, yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for listening, everyone.
Listening.
Great, we'll be back
episode.
Soon. Bye.
Love
bye.
You. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Tom Hanks Defense Force. Find us and join the conversation on Twitter and Facebook.